Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hello, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, we celebrate the life and legacy of B.B. King. You'll hear from the man himself, as well as from other people who he touched, like Aretha Franklin, Charlie Wilson, Quincy Jones, Chuck D, Gladys Knight, Jimmy Jam, Lionel Richie, Otis Clay. Folks, we have a fantastic lineup for you as we celebrate B.B. King. All that more coming up right now on News One Now. The world lost a legendary musical pioneer on Thursday night when B.B. King died at the age of 89 at his home in Las Vegas. He had suffered a series of small strokes based on his type 2 diabetes, which he suffered from several decades, which also, diabetes of course, also killed his mother. King was born in Bena, Mississippi as Riley Ben King in 1925. As a boy, he picked cotton and played the guitar on the street corner for dimes. After serving in World War II, he moved to Memphis, where he made a splash as a disc jockey known as Bill Street Blues Boy. That name was eventually shortened to B.B. Throughout his time on the radio, B.B. recorded music and performed as much as possible. He landed his first hit, 3 O'Clock Blues, in 1951. He went on to perform on average 250 concerts a year and was the first bluesman to play in the Soviet Union. B.B. King's long list of honors includes 15 Grammys, a Kennedy Center honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Joining me now on the FaceTime is Carver Randall. He is the personal attorney and longtime friend of B.B. King. He is joined with Dion Brown, executive director of the B.B. King Museum. And also joining us on the phone line is blues singer Candy Staton, longtime friend of B.B. King. Carver, I want to go to you first. How long did you know B.B. King, and when did you guys first meet?
Well, I've known Mr. King practically all of my life. However, he didn't know me. There's about 15 or so years different than our ages. But B.B. would come to him, and I was about 10 or 12 years old, and visit some of his relatives and friends who lived near me. And I would always see him. He didn't know me from Adam, but I got to know him in the late 1970s. And we started being around each other. He was coming to Indianola and Jackson for the Meg Evers homecoming. I would see him more often then, and finally got a chance to sit down and talk with him in late 1970. And our relationship grew from that.
When you talk about that relationship, one of the things that I think was important was the fact that no matter where he went, he always stayed true to who he was, and that is his sound, his unique sound from the Mississippi Delta, which really was originated by black folks. Carver?
Yes. I didn't understand your question.
What was also consistent with B.B. King is that he stayed true to who he was when it came to his sound, and that coming from the Mississippi Delta, which originated with African Americans.
That's correct. And in the early 50s, a lot of musicians abandoned what they were doing. B.B. stayed with his style and stayed with it because he loved it until he did prevail as a superstar. But a lot of people changed that. B.B. never did.
Candy Staton, I want to go to you right now. You also knew B.B. King for quite some time, and he really was a legendary figure who really made blues the center point all across the world, as opposed to allowing it to fade away.
He sure did. He was one of the pioneers, and I was so honored to be on shows with him. I met him in the 70s when I'm Just a Prisoner came out, and Sweet Feeling and all those blues songs. Only a few ladies were out there in the blues field, so I opened for B.B. many, many times from early 70s all the way to 1976 until Young Hearts Run Free came out, because we were doing the Chitlin' Circuit kind of thing, you know, and he was always there. He always gave me advice, because I was green, just breaking into the music business. He showed me things that pitfalls that I should avoid, and he was like a big brother. I've seen him several times, and he was just always so glad to see me. I saw him, I was at in Atlantic City in when his 80th birthday came around, and he was just always so loving and kind to me, like a big brother. He was so sweet. I'm going to miss him. My condolences go out to his family.
Candy, when you talk about knowing him for quite some time, mm-hmm. I think what's also interesting, folks I talked to, in a moment I'm going to hear from Lionel Richie and some mm-hmm. other people as well, they talked about he always had a smile on his face, even though he was singing heartbreaking songs.
Mm-hmm. That's a little bit where I came from. Like, Young Hearts Run Free is a sad song, but with a nice beat. And so people actually, they dance to a sad song. But that's the way B.B. was. He was always smiling. He was always in a good mood. He loved his music and Lucille. I can't imagine. I got so many stories. I wish I had time to tell them. But I was with him in Chicago, and he was always true to his music. He never varied like a lot of us did. You know, I do all kinds of music now. But B.B. stayed blues man, and that's how he died, the blues man. He's my number one. I was his number one fan.
Yesterday, I talked to, actually a couple of days ago, I talked to Lionel Richie, and he also talked about B.B. King when they first met, and what it was like sitting at the feet of B.B. King and learning about music. And so here's what Lionel Richie had to say.
Okay. One of the greatest things in the world that ever happened to me was I had a chance to sit with him for a long period of time. We were doing the Luciano Pavarotti show for War Child over in Modena in Italy. And of course, on this show, of course, was the who's who of the recording business, and BB was there, and it was so beautiful. Every time I tried to come up with a crisis of how difficult my life was, BB would over the corner and go, honey, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, if you want to talk about hard times, let me tell you about hard times. You know?
I mean, he was the king of blues now.
Yeah, but I love that one line he said to me. He said, always remember one thing. It's hard to write the blues in the back.
You know, we need someone to come along.
That was, of course, that was Lionel Richie. And that was a great line there when he said, it's always hard. B.B. King told him it's always hard to write blues in the back of a limousine. We come back. We'll talk more about the life and legacy of B.B. King. We can also get your thoughts. You can hit me up on Twitter at Roland S. Martin or go to our News One Facebook page. We come back. We're going to hear from Eddie LaVert, Chuck D., and so many others about B.B. King right here on News One Now on TV One.
They used to bill me as B.B. King, the Beale Street Blues Boy, excuse me. Well, B.B. really meant Blues Boy, but then people would write me, and instead of saying B.B., the Blues Boy King, and so on, Beale Street Blues Boy, rather, they would put three B's. Three B's, which meant, you know, B.B. King, B.B. Blues Boy King. And it was sort of a problem for me, so I shortened it to B.B.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
We're back celebrating the legendary B.B. King. And so, folks, a couple of days ago, I called up another good buddy of mine. He was tweeting about B.B. King, and he was sharing his thoughts about who he was and his memory. And a lot of folks would be shocked to hear what Chuck D., the hip-hop pioneer, co-founder of Public Enemy, has to say. Well, he said that King played a critical role impacting hip-hop music, impacting the history of music. And so here is Chuck D.
I was part of the Lightning in the Bottle project at Radio City, which was a celebration of the blues in this country. It was put together by Martin Scorsese and great dignitaries, and it was quite an event. Matter of fact, that event, I think Antoine Fuqua was the producer of the film, and then also, you know, that the great portion of the people, we took a gigantic photo on the stairs of Radio City with all these blues legends, and I think maybe 30% of them are not here today. So that was very important. So that's where I met him that night. We took pictures. I was all suited up. I performed that night. It's a DVD and a concert film that's out, and a highlight of my career, one of the highlights of my career, being part and being asked to be part of, that.
And so that was Chuck D talking about B.B. King there as well. And, of course, still on FaceTime, we're joined by Carver Randall. He is the personal attorney and longtime friend of B.B. King. And also, of course, we have the executive director of the museum, the B.B. King Museum, Dion, as well. And we're also blues singer Candy Staten is on the phone. Dion, I want to go to you because with the museum, it was about remembering his legacy. It was about also getting folks to stay focused on the blues. And with the museum, what do you want folks to know and understand about who Riley King was?
You know, thank you. We have people come from all over the world to see this Living Legends Museum. You know, it's rare that you have a museum built in your honor while you're still living. And what they did here is they took the museum, and although it's primarily about B.B. King, it talks about his lifestyle, what was going on down here in the Delta, the civil rights movement, all aspects of B.B., why he was living. And, of course, it has all of his Lucilles, quite a few of his Lucilles. Tells a different story than just about Mr. King himself.
And when you talk about his interactive museum, people come from all over the world. He certainly was someone who spent so much time really introducing blues to folks in Europe, in the Soviet Union. I mean, he visited countries all over the map.
Right. You know, believe it or not, what I find funny is, not necessarily funny, but we get people from Asia. I understand Europeans, but when Asians come over, they get just a bigger kick out of anything. Another thing that's good about this museum, one of Mr. King's, you know, he had diabetes, and so we do a lot of programming in the community dealing with diabetes, and one of Mr. King's also dreams was to unite the community through this museum, and through our programming, through our music programs, that's what we attempt to do down here.
You know, it's funny.
Just show the legacy of Mr. King.
It's interesting you talked about folks from Asia coming over. I can tell you, we're going to hear later from Otis Clay, I can tell you that, many blues artists, they have a tremendous fan base when they go to Japan, when they go to Hong Kong, when they go to China, when they go to Taiwan. And so, yeah, a lot of Americans, especially young African Americans, may not have an appreciation of the blues from the Mississippi Delta, but I can tell you international audiences have certainly gravitated towards the blues.
And that's what we try and do down here. We try and get the younger generations to get involved with the blues, you know, and we show them how the blues birthed all music. So it doesn't have to be the hip hop or the rock and roll, but it all came from the blues, which you right here in the Delta is the home of the King. It's a natural fit, and that's what we try and get into our youth down here.
Carver, Dion mentioned B.B. King having diabetes. I mean, that was something that he dealt with. He did commercials as well. He was always talking about it. And, of course, later in life, it impacted some of his performances as well. And so how did he manage? How did he manage on the road having this tough disease but still performing 200-300 shows a year?
Well, interesting enough, I'm diabetic myself, and I know what he has to deal with. One of your first things is dietary control, and of course, you got to lose weight and take your medication as prescribed. He has done that religiously in the last few years. I think if he had started early to be more conscientious about his health, he would have been able to ward off his diabetes and keep it from affecting him as critically as it did. The older you get, the worse diabetes is on you. And many of us start to deal with that situation, but we start too late. And I deal with mine. I've been diabetic since 85. And I know what it takes to try to get your health stabilized and to keep being able to do what you do every day, which is a real good job, big job.
Right.
And other people have to work with you in order to help you do that.
All right, then. Gentlemen, hold tight 1 second. I'm going to a commercial break right now. And, of course, the video that we're playing right now is when B.B. King performed at the White House with a performance there. And President Barack Obama sang a little bit. Go back to the video, please. Sang a little bit of Sweet Home Chicago. And so it was really interesting sitting here checking that out. So we're going to go to break with the president and B.B. King at the White House right here. On News One Now, TV One, you can share your thoughts about B.B. King calling 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. We'll take your phone calls. Here's the president singing with the legendary B.B. King.
First step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Red Stella about so long, and he wanted $15 for it. I was making $15 a month. So I talked to my boss and asked him if he'd get it for me and take out half of it the first month and half the next. And he did. And that's how I got my first guitar.
Got your first guitar.
I was about 12.
Folks, welcome back to TV One's News One Now as we celebrate the life and legacy of B.B. King. Eddie LaVert, he was a teenager in Ohio when B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland came to town and performed. And he recalls looking through the window of the club and seeing those two perform. He got a chance to actually know him, got a chance to talk to B.B. King. And he made sure, he said, to tell his son Gerald, when it comes to the blues, this is somebody who you need to always listen to and always check out. And I talked to A. LaVert, and this is what he had to say about B.B. King.
You know, we need someone to come along and pick up that guitar and to give us the real blues, the blues that make you want to dance. You know, it's like in my house, Saturday and Sunday and Friday, blues days. Those were the days you listened to St. James Infirmary or The Thrill Is Gone. Or, you know, my mom, you know, even down to Hank Ballard in the Midnighters, Annie Had a Baby, all of that kind of stuff, man. You know, who will continue that now?
Absolutely.
All I can say is that B.B. King, you will be sorely missed because you're the last of a dying breed.
Still on the phone with us is Candy Staton, friend of B.B. King, also blues singer. Now joining us is Jimmy Tillman, blues historian and educator. Jimmy, I want to go to you first. You heard A. LaVert talk about hopefully somebody coming along and picking that guitar up, picking up the mantle of B.B. King. Do you see there being a new generation of artists who really are about being true to that art form, the Mississippi Delta sound, that art form that we know so much about, B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland and Muddy Waters and Buddy Guy?
Hello?
Jimmy, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I got you. Yes. You're very low. Your voice is very low, but I hear you just faintly. I caught the last part of the question, Roland. But there is a disparity in our culture with our musicians right now because they took the music out of the school system. In 1971, 2 and 3, during that time, I was teaching blues in the schools to children and Cabrini Green and Harvey and here in Chicago. So they would have the understanding of who they were and where their music come from. The music tells the life of a people. B.B., of all of the musicians, it's going to be a paradigm shift in this blues music because B.B. was the the apex, the top of the line. He was the last of the lineage that goes back to Booker White and Son House and Muddy and all those people. But all those, and then Booker White was a great guitar player, but he also was B.B.'s cousin. And most of the blues musicians at that time, Booker White's style was so far ahead of everyone that all of the older blues musicians, they patterned their style after Booker White and would go study with him. But now we don't, our music is in England and overseas and in Europe, where the blues is really appreciated and played and respected over there, more so than over in here in America.
Candy Staten, what about that? Because this is absolutely a unique musical art form to African Americans. This is by us, for us, if you will.
Yes, and he's right about Europe. We don't hear much of us here in America, but when I go to Europe, I draw thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to shows, and they love the music, and that's where it's being rebirthed in Europe. And I just want to warn all of our young people that are coming up right now, you need to get serious about the legacy of our music and make sure that our legacy is continued through generation and generations, because we started this thing even from slavery. People sung the blues because they had the blues, and it came from a deep place in our souls. We were singing about our problems, the times that we were going through, and not too many people can go that deep, but I tell you, we need to go and find a place in our souls where we can bring this music and not let this music die away and give it away to other people. But we need to hang on to our legacy, and America needs to wake up and start embracing our blues music again and go back to our roots. You know, he was absolutely right.
I was talking with Quincy Jones, and it's interesting you talked about that. And Quincy, of course, is a legend in his own right, and he also shared his thoughts about his longtime buddy, B.B. King. And so here's Quincy.
We were very close. We do loop Montreux every year, you know. We own Montreux now because God Navas died, you know, we were partners. But B.B. King, we do him on the show every year. And we go all the way back to when Maya Angelou was 30. She wrote the lyrics for the songs and La Revive for B.B.
Now, that was, of course, Quincy Jones. And also, we had a great conversation with Gladys Knight. And Gladys Knight, it was quite interesting because she talked about, Candy, how B.B. King, he pretty much was family in terms of how he treated them, how he treated her, how he treated the Pips. And he first got a chance to know her and her family in Atlanta. And so here's what Gladys Knight had to say.
But lifting us up, saying, you guys have something special. You know, keep it up. I see your work ethic. Do this, don't do that. You know, he was more like a parent, you know, away from home with us.
Jimmy, when you hear legends describe B.B. King and what he meant, you made that particular point about how Europe is embracing it. I mean, you have a number of whites all across Europe who literally worship at the feet of B.B. King and blues legends.
In 1962, there was a big migration rolling from Chicago. I think it was Willie Dixon, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Shaky Jake, all of I can't remember everybody. Better Guy, Junior Wells, all of the Chicago blues legends now, but at that time they were the Chicago blues artists, were contracted to go to Europe and do, like, I think it was a month tour to bring blues to those rock artists in English. Went to England, Germany, France. They went over there and did this blues. So I was supposed to be on the tour. Mother wouldn't let me go because I was still in college. I was 19, I think. I was also going to be in Willie Dixon's band at that time. And the purpose of that was to show our music as an art form to other countries. What happened in doing that tour was the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Cream, the Who. These were kids at that time. Some of them couldn't get into the places where the blues was being played, but they were listening outside of the venue and would hear the music coming through the walls. And when they heard it, I think one of the stories was that Muddy Waters was playing one of those clubs, and he looked how big it was and looked at a little bitty amp and told the band to turn everything all the way up to 10. So when they turned their mics on and the PA came on, they were cranked up to 10, and the people thought that that's how loud and how you're supposed to play the blues. And so what happened was the rock artists who couldn't get in could hear the music through the walls. Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones, they were outside. This was a story told me outside the venue, and they was hearing "I'm a Rolling Stone," you know. And they took that to one of those. That lyric became the name of their band.
There you go.
The influences of the blues goes through all walks of life. Now, when I worked with Willie Dixon, he said, what you must remember is the blues is the true facts of life. It's either a story about you, the person singing the song,
right,
or about somebody that person knows that it actually happened. The difference between the blues and rock and roll is the blues tells the truth. The rock and roll, you make up something, but the blues is about something that has happened to someone personally.
Right.
The thrill is gone. The Thrill Is Gone was really written basically about Dr. King.
Gotcha.
That was that thing, Thrill Is Gone, because at that time we were all feeling that, and we didn't know what it was, but when Billy B put it in The Thrill Is Gone,
gotcha,
then that connection came true to everyone that the thrill was gone, that Dr. King had died.
Jimmy?
And been assassinated, yes.
Jimmy, first of all, I got to go to break right now. I certainly appreciate you joining us, sir. Candy Staten, also appreciate you joining us as well. When we come back, folks, we're going to hear from the likes of Otis Clay, Jimmy Jam, Aretha Franklin, Philip Bailey, and Charlie Wilson. Plus, we'll take your phone calls reminiscing about B.B. King. The number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. It is 26 before the top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back as we continue to honor B.B. King. Many legends across the country, across the world, shared their thoughts about B.B. King, and we put together this little package here, give you a sense of what so many others had to say about B.B. King. So let's go ahead and play that right now, folks.
The name B.B. King originated on Bill Street, and this was during the disc jockey years. They used to bill me as B.B. King, the Bill Street Blues Boy. I've always had to think of myself as a second, not best person. No, I'm talking about in the society, second class. Because if you were black and you sang the blues, it was like being black twice.
People like Mr. King created the blues from the rural area. They didn't have great guitars, but they played and they sang about their pain.
I used to hear Hawaiian music on the radio, and it had a strange sound of harmony that I liked. And when these country musicians played, they got this steel guitar that they lay on their lap and played, and oh my God, did you? I never heard anything sound like it. I learned that if I take the guitar, trill my hand like this, it would somewhat fool my ears a bit and say it sounded similar, not like, but similar to those sounds I like.
Every guitar player that I know, those shoes will never be filled, man.
He was a beacon for all of us who love this kind of music, and I thank him from the bottom of my heart.
No, I'm a diabetic. Got bad knees, bad back, head ain't much good either.
I seen him on shows where backstage you thought he wasn't gonna be able to perform, but as soon as he stepped on that stage and they said B.B. King, bam, showtime.
Before B.B. ever hit the stage, when we walked out representing that he's behind us, standing ovation, just because they know he's on his way. Now that's pretty powerful.
Nobody
has ever been able to match the skill or copy the sound of the King of the Blues.
People call me King of the Blues. I've heard it many, many times. Do you think I think that? No, I do not. I think it's a lot of people can do exactly what I do, and a lot of them can do it better. They're just not me.
All right, then. It's also great to listen to folks who knew him for a long time. And one of those folks is Otis Clay. And so I had a chance to chat with Otis. And he met BB King 53 years ago in Chicago. Here's what Otis Clay had to say.
On his 46th birthday, and at the old Roberts Motel, which was at 37th and Michigan, here in Chicago, and he had obviously played in Gary, Indiana at that particular night. So he was parking his car, taking his clothes out of the trunk. Me and Bobby Jones, another singer, we were together because we wanted to have breakfast. We wanted to eat breakfast and probably meet some other people too, but we all would meet down at Roberts and have breakfast down there. And so, you know, it was like, oh, hey, Mr. K, hey, BB, how you doing, you know? And, hey, fellas, how you doing? And the conversation started, and, well, guys, come on in. You know, we went into his room, and probably some other folks were there, too, and ordered breakfast for everybody. We just sat there and talked on into the morning, man, daylight. You know, but that was typical BB King.
Aretha Franklin, she had quite a unique story to tell about B.B. King and her family. And so here's what the Queen of Soul had to say about B.B. King.
That's something I found out for a couple of days ago that I didn't even know. My dad married him in his first wife.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, our family came through Memphis out of Clarksdale, Mississippi. And Cleveland, Mississippi, Sunflower County, where my dad was born. And we lived in Memphis, and he pastored in Memphis for many years. And he married B.B. King and his first wife, too.
But I formally met him on his 46th birthday.
Folks, when I was talking to Lionel Richie, he told me this interesting story. And so B.B. King was performing here in Washington, D.C. In the early 1970s. And on the ticket, Earth, Wind & Fire, the Commodores, Ohio Players. So Lionel said they were all backstage, and they were all trying to figure out who was going to go on first. And so B.B. King overheard them talking. He said, look, you know what? There's a flight at 10 o'clock. I can go on first. I can go catch that flight. Y'all can go ahead and perform, it's all good. But Philip Bailey, when I told him the story, he said, you know what, that was a pretty dumb idea for them to have to walk behind B.B. King. Here's Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind & Fire.
Lionel is so right. It's like, I had forgotten that one because we did several with him, but yeah. Because we were young and thinking, you know, everybody was hot. We were hot and they were hot. You know, and so, you know, we're thinking, you know, we're pretty big stuff here, you know. And I remember that so distinctly because he totally brought the house down.
Time for us to go to a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to hear from Uncle Charlie Wilson about B.B. King. We'll also show you some front pages across the world of B.B. King, and we'll also chat with soul artist Timothy Bloom. All of that right here on News 1 Now on TV 1. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Roland S. Martin or at News 1. Or go to our News 1 Facebook page. 15 before top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, I talked to Uncle Charlie Wilson about B.B. King, and one of the things that he said was, you know what, when it came to playing the guitar, he had no peer.
Oh, my God. B.B. King was one of the greatest guitarists we know of today, blues. He has been the shoulders of which any and every guitar player has ever stood on his shoulders. He just stood on his shoulders, man. And some of us have something good. Some of us have something that is great. And some of us have something special. like BB is a gift that just keeps on giving. It would be guitar players for the rest of our lives that we know that will be using some of those bends and some of those licks that BB King has left for us to learn, you know. And he was definitely one of the greatest gifts that God has ever given a guitar player. One of the best.
Folks, that was Charlie Wilson, and I wanted to show again the Jackson Clarion Ledger. I think out of all the front pages, this really was the best that I saw that personified. They had actually had a wrap around the newspaper of B.B. King, and we played that soundbite of Charlie Wilson talking about guitarist B.B. King. Right now, my next guest is singer-songwriter, artist Timothy Bloom. He has a new single out featuring Herbie Hancock. It is called Stand in the Way. As we talk, we're going to play that particular soundbite. Timothy, first of all, welcome to News One Now. How you doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
All right, but you brought your guitar. Where'd you put it? Where is it?
It disappeared.
Bring it back. Why? It makes no sense to me. That's why it was a perfect segue talking about B.B. King and playing the guitar. You play the guitar. Talk about, we'll talk to the album in a minute, but again, this phenomenal artist.
Yeah. B.B., like, you know, growing up, you know, when I was a kid, from B.B. King to Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, like, great guitar player, like one of the greatest. Just studying his art has made a huge impact on my craft, you know, just blues, period, you know, the style of playing. It was just amazing. When I heard the news, I was just, my heart dropped. I just wanted to play like all night.
So when you talk about the blues, give us a sense. So on your album, do we get a mix of that?
Yeah.
Blues and R&B, what else we
got? Yeah, you get a mix of blues, you get, blues and rock and roll, you know.
So first of all, bring the guitar, please. I mean, we're in the break and he's playing the guitar, and I'm like, what happened to the doggone guitar? So how long you been playing?
I've been playing for like 13, 14 years. Yeah.
So what was the first? Now BB King called his guitar Lucille. You name yours. Now he named his because that was a fire. He was playing in Arkansas, and then he ran back in and grabbed his guitar, and then the guy told him that the fight that caused the fire to start was over a woman named Lucille, and that's how he actually named it Lucille. So have you named your guitar?
Well, I have a few guitars. I've named my first guitar.
Well, he had a few too, but they all were named Lucille.
Well, if that's the case, then this is Tabitha.
Oh, that's Tabitha.
Yeah.
All right, so who's Tabitha?
Tabitha.
You just can't just name a guitar. It got to be a story behind a guitar.
Well, okay.
By the name.
There was a childhood friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
Who passed away. And I just named my guitar.
Always with her.
Yeah.
All right then. So you got a song with Herbie Hancock. So
yeah.
Now that's a legend right there.
Oh yeah.
What was that experience like?
Herbie's great. We got to get together and talk and just speak on the lifestyle of music, and it was just amazing. His wisdom and knowledge was overwhelming. You know, even today, he's like a mentor to me. So he's pretty awesome.
So. You have the album. Where are you going next in terms of, are you performing? Where can folks check you out?
Next, I'm going out to France, Paris. I'm doing the Meet'em Festival. I'm just traveling right now, doing a lot of great dates. You can check me out on timothybloom.com, the website, with all the dates and stuff like that.
So what's the bluesiest song on the CD?
The bluesiest song is For Love.
For Love?
Yeah.
Okay. All right then. So what? Is that drama? Or because you know, blues song, you got to have some drama.
It's a little drama.
And what's now? I always ask these questions. What's your favorite on here?
They're all my favorite.
No, you got to pick, bro.
I have to pick.
You got to pick. You can't just say they're all your favorite. You got to pick.
Oh man, For Love.
For Love. That's the one you really want folks to check out.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the deal. I don't have. First of all, kill the music. I don't have your guitar mic'd up. But do a little something for us. In honor of B.B. King, kill the music, please.
I gave it all up. Material things mean nothing to me. It's you and my dreams, these cars and those girls. Come and dime in a dozen. Girl, you rule my world, and I'm drunk off your loving. This is not a love hangover. Driving my sorrow. goes into tomorrow, fighting for freedom, only reason.
Folks, yeah. It is Timothy Bloom. And be sure to check his CD out.
Yeah.
The deluxe edition.
Yes, sir.
Not bad. This is News One Now on TV One. Back in a moment.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Folks, birthday shout-out time yesterday. San Antonio Spurs point guard Tony Parker turned 33, but his team got eliminated from the playoffs, so he's probably on vacation. But of course, my Houston Rockets won, just in case all y'all Clippers fans forgot. R&B singer Candy Burris turned 39 years old. Actress Rochelle Ates, known for her role in Madea's Family Reunion, she turned 39. I got to send her a text. Actor Hill Harper, my frat. He turned 49 years old, and boxer Sugar Ray Leonard turned 59. Today, football player Vince Young, who married my cousin Candace, but he went to the University of Texas. I can't stand Longhorns. Vince turns 32. Baseball Hall of Famer Reggie Jackson, he turns 69 years old today. All right, folks, a lot of you have been called. We want to get your thoughts about B.B. King, so I want to go to the phone lines to do so. Let's go to Gwen calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Gwen, how you doing?
Hey, how are you, Roland? So nice to speak with you.
What are your thoughts about B.B. King?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I really loved his music and just the mastery that he had with this guitar. It was almost like when he was playing, there was a conversation going on between he and Lucille. And I just wanted to say or reiterate what Candy Staten said. I hope that some African-American picks this up, because if they don't, it's going to be stolen. The narrative is going to be that they started it. And so I just hope that somebody younger appreciates this music and takes off with it.
All right, then let's go to Deborah in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Deborah.
Hi.
What's your comments about B.B. King?
Well, I just heard his music through my mother. She liked B.B. King, The Thrill Is Gone, and that's where I've learned about B.B. King.
All right, then. What's your favorite B.B. King song?
I guess it would be The Thrill Is Gone.
All right. Deborah, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Let's go to the Bronx, Alberta. Alberta, you're on News One Now. What are your thoughts about B.B. King?
Yes, my thoughts about B.B. King. I didn't get to see him at the Apollo when he came, but my sister and everything went. And he gave me a phone call, and he told me the thrill wasn't gone. And I just loved him. And also my mother... We was braced up on the blues because I'm from Mississippi, and she used to love this song that he made, Skin and Legs and All.
All right, then. Alberta, I certainly appreciate it. Alberta, I appreciate it. Thank you so very much. You know, folks, in many ways, B.B. King was a soundtrack of my childhood. My father, and my mom always played B.B. King's music, and so I had fond memories of sitting at our kitchen table listening to him as well, listening to Lucille Talks Back, listening to Take It Home. And a few years ago, I met B.B. King at Congressional Black Caucus. We met twice, the 1992 Republican National Convention where he performed, but also when he was at CBC. It was a shock to me when he told me how much he appreciated my work on television. And I never do this with stars. I actually called my parents and gave the phone to him and wanted my dad to talk to him. And he had a great conversation with him. He certainly was an American original. And so we certainly want to celebrate his life. Thank you so very much for joining us, folks. He was 89 years old, and then tomorrow we have details of his funeral. B.B. King will be absolutely missed.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.